A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
That is some absolutely world class sitting down there, staying at home, just sitting down. Oh look, there he goes. He's eaten his fourth sandwich of the day. This is remarkable.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning.
Good morning.
Whoa. Hello?
Eden this week.
Oh, wow. That was weird. Hello?
What happened there?
Oh.
Hello?
Oh, wow. This is so bizarre.
Oh, I'm on a massive delay.
Yeah, and your voice is now about an octave deeper than it should be. This is fucked up. We're going to have to start again.
I'm not doing that myself.
You sound kind of drunk.
Maybe we should keep this, though.
I'm going to use this
if it's funny.
It is kind of funny. So I'm going to
keep it.
Yeah, I'm going to play this as the first intro. Now I'm going to stop and we'll try and correct this and start again. Hang on, folks. Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Take two. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm fine. Yeah. Everything is fine here.
I mean, we did have that, didn't we? We recorded a podcast for the Patreon where
yeah.
we came out like we were on helium.
That's true. I think
you
I have
to fix it in post.
Yeah, I have the original recording, actually. So I'll drop a little bit of that recording in here now.
And now yeah. that all my time is here, I kind of need those markers and maybe to an extent need those drugs.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
The trials and tribulations of doing a podcast.
I'm telling you, it's like, I don't know what it is. It's the equivalent of doing something that's not that technologically difficult, but which always presents strange and unusual problems which you never think you're going to encounter. So, you know, what can we do but just crack on and hope for the best and see where it takes us.
How is everything? How's it all going this week for you?
It's fine. It's grand. Yeah. Yeah, same. Thankfully, everyone is well and healthy and, you know, no issues in here or in the wider family or anything like that. You know, I've got...
How long is your lockdown going to go for at the moment?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. I mean,
they've not put any date on it.
No, I mean, it keeps getting extended, of course. So I think there's a date till, like, the lockdown has been extended to the 5th of May or something like that. I don't know. You know what? I had a moment the other day. There's a pub up the road from me. It was a real Alfalas pub and it closed down. And these guys have opened up a brewery in the back of it. It's called Four Provinces. And they make, you know, craft beer, one of those new craft beer breweries. And they took over the pub. They reopened the pub. And, you know, it's taken them about a year to get it up and running and to build the business and everything else. And, of course, it's closed down now. But the brewery is still going. And they put something on social media the other day to say, look, if you're looking for a few beers, you know, we can sell you a case of cans and we'll deliver it to you, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, support a local business and get beer seems
sure.
pretty decent to me. So I said, you know, drop them a message and they came around on Friday to deliver a case of beer, which they did. I just said to the guy, you know, you're back to work in the brewery, but like any word, any advice on pubs and, you know, when you might be able to open again. And he said, yeah, we're sort of being told maybe September.
Right.
And I was like, oh, fuck. I mean, it's not that,
yeah.
you know, being in the pub is the be-all and end-all or anything like that, but it's just this sort of realization that we're in April and they're maybe thinking about September for just opening the pub again. And of course, look, pubs aren't the most important thing, but by extension, that means lots of other businesses and places where people go and congregate are going to be closed for that length of time. So that kind of hammers it home to you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I think some of the tabloids today in England or Britain are running with the story that the pubs will be one of the last things to reopen.
That's what the guy said. He said, you know, they're being told that it could be schools and pubs are among the last things to reopen.
Yeah, I guess it's just very hard to enforce distancing in an environment like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, it's such an odd time and everyone's kind of trying to timetable the future.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. So how's it been going with you? Anything strange? What are you doing to pass the time and to keep yourself occupied?
I mean, you know, I'm very fortunate in some ways in that most of the work I had on is sort of largely continuing. Obviously, I was due to be filming soon. That's all been put back or shelved.
Oh, the horrible histories or...
I was due to start shooting May 25th, which obviously isn't going to happen. But it's really fascinating, actually, sort of trying to figure out when that can happen. And there are so many hurdles to jump through and different issues with, health and security and all kinds of problems.
We're going to run out of TV shows and movies.
Well, this is it.
We are.
They slowed EastEnders down. They slowed the soaps down in the UK because they were like, they went from like 4 or 5 episodes a week to 2 to sort of string it out.
Right.
Sooner or later, the soaps are going to run out. And then what happens?
Then what happens? How then are we going to...
It's just the news. And what? That's more depressing than anything.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, we are. If things don't kick off again, we're just going to be watching repeats over and over, the same shows over and over again.
I know. But have you watched any of the telly that's kind of like lockdown TV? Where, you know, for example, Have I Got News For You? They filmed it in isolation. Have you seen any of that?
No. No, I mean...
I haven't either, really.
Yeah. I'm sort of... You know, it's so prevalent, it's everywhere on the news that I don't necessarily want to be reminded of it. You know what? I've tried to watch a couple of clips of... John Oliver. And I've watched... A couple of clips of who's the English John Oliver guy? Nish Kumar?
Nish Kumar.
Right. And, you know, they're very funny guys, very clever guys, and what they do is really excellent. But without the audience, it's got to be really tough for them, but it makes it such a strange viewing experience, doesn't it? Because, you know, they're throwing out these lines and they're funny lines or they're witty or they're acerbic, and you kind of feel like they're not landing anywhere because there's no reaction to them, which, you know, I guess it's odd. Maybe just we'll get used to it or what have you, but...
It is weird. I mean, the time is ripe for me, surely. As a comedian used to performing to no laughs, I should be front and centre of this new TV campaign.
Exactly.
You know what I
mean? Yeah.
I've been waiting for this moment. I've been practicing for it for 10 years.
Talking to yourself, making videos, interacting with yourself. You don't need an audience. Maybe you could invent your own studio audience.
Yeah.
Laughing hysterically at your own gags and everything else.
Yeah. Like in The King of Comedy, Robert De Niro, he hears all the laughter in his head. Scary, but it could happen. I mean, I'm just doing the same stuff as everyone else. Bits of work, bits of writing, watching telly, playing some video games.
Yeah.
No big change.
We didn't get to play our FIFA tournament.
Yes. That was shelved. Even the fake football got cancelled, but we will try again.
Will we? What night is good for you this week? Tell me.
Oh, I mean, this week it's a free-for-all. I think any time.
Maybe. Okay. Let's say tomorrow night, will we?
Okay, yeah.
We'll say tomorrow night. Like, the people can get prepared. You know, they can build themselves up for this extravaganza of video game skill and everything else. So we were going to do...
Tuesday night, that is. In case you're listening to this Tuesday morning, we mean Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, yeah. Tuesday night, 9 p.m. We'll go with that. And I think we were going to do Arsenal versus Arsenal, Republic of Ireland versus England, which I'm slightly scared of.
Yeah, it's not a great Republic of Ireland team on FIFA. I have actually played with them and... There's not a lot going on there.
I don't even know who's in the squad.
It's kind of like Robbie Brady and Glenn Whelan. That's kind of it.
Okay, here's the Republic of Ireland squad.
It's the strikers that threw me. I had no idea who they were. In my head, it's still Kevin Doyle and Shane Long. Do you know what I mean?
Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I mean, Harry Arter. Well, Shane Long is still there, and he's got Shane 80 Long's pace. He's probably the quickest Irishman in the squad.
That's what you want. Callum Robinson was the one who I didn't know who he was. He plays for West Brom, apparently.
Right. He's got 85 pace.
Yeah. So that's all right, actually. Mm.
Yeah, okay. Look, we'll make it work. We'll make it work.
You'll
feel like it
balls
could be
long over the top.
Yeah, exactly.
For these guys to chase onto.
Yeah, set pieces all on the head of Shane Duffy. Telling you, that's how we're going to do it.
Everything goes through Jeff Hendrick.
Duffy versus Maguire. That's what it's going to be. What a feast.
So I'm looking forward to that. And then what was the third match we were going to play?
We were going to let the people in the YouTube comments decide, make some suggestions, and maybe we'll pick them at random, or if there's a really good suggestion, we could take it from there and just see, you know. Okay. Let's go with the flow. I mean, you know, we don't have anything better to be doing with our lives, so.
Sure.
So... Yeah,
and that's it for the Ask Us this week. Thanks for listening, guys. Stay safe.
All the best. Take your medicine.
What football news is there, if any? I mean, still no football.
Still no football
anytime soon.
No. Has there been any football news? I mean, there is the news that the Arsenal players have agreed to take a wage cut. Mm-hmm. You know, after all the to-ing and fro-ing. When it comes down to it, I think it was quite an interesting point that if and when this thing is signed off and becomes official, because I guess there's a fair amount of contractual stuff to get through, legal stuff and everything else to make this happen. They're going to have to sign either, what do you call it, contract amendments or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Arsenal and Arsenal's players will become the first to take a pay cut in the Premier League. So
it is. I mean, there are hoops to jump through, as you say. As I understand it, nothing is signed as yet. And it wouldn't surprise me, knowing football and knowing the way people work in football, if there were one or two wrangles maybe at that late stage with some of the wording and things like that.
Sure. I mean, I'm not jumping through that hoop. That hoop is... That's an irredeemable hoop.
I agreed. I know I voted to jump through the hoop, but now that the hoop is presented to me,
I feel slightly
reticent.
I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable with that hoop. You know, the hoop is looking at me in a funny way.
Quite whose hoop it would be. But I'm sure that once Raoul and company present the team with the... Well, say show them their tunnel area, they'll plunge into it wholeheartedly.
Yes, they can all jump through Raoul's hoop.
And the executives that emerged during the week had taken a hefty pay cut themselves.
Yes, I did like the way that was worded in the statement that it came from. Earlier this month, our executives agreed to take a 30% cut. Oh, did they? Earlier this month, eh? Like how much earlier? Was it like the 1st of April? The minute it happened? Was it like, oh, let's take a pay cut? Or was it just slightly earlier than the footballers not taking a pay cut so you could make yourselves look good? Far be it for me to be that cynical or anything, James, but
I think,
you know.
Yeah, no, I think you might be onto something there. But it was, very interesting wording. But listen, I mean, 30%, you know, that is a sizable amount in fairness. I'd be interested to know quite the specifics of how that works, but we won't ever know that.
No, I don't know. It did say they were going to waive 30% of their salary. So what does that mean? Does it mean that they get it back later, or are they, you know, is it going back into the coffers to pay, you know, the guy in the post room who delivers the letters around Highbury House? I presume they have somebody.
Post room Mick. He's a club legend. I'm actually writing a big feature on him for The Athletic.
You're interviewing the doctor who brought him into this world via the birth canal of his mother, postmistress Mick.
I mean, look, we'll see when it's announced. I think with anything like this, you're kind of, you know, you don't want to jump on it too quickly because until it's signed and sealed. I mean, I don't know if you saw the line, which I believe to be true, about the very hefty bonus that would come with winning the Champions League.
I have to say that made me laugh. It really did. Like, it's a £500,000 bonus, which, of course, is, you know, not an insignificant amount of money, right? I mean, it's not. But I would say that if you are an Arsenal player and you were part of a team that won the Champions League for Arsenal for the first time in its history, you know, I think a bigger bonus could be merited there. You know, it's what is it? It's like a week's wages and a bit for Mesut Ozil. That's all that is, you know?
It's a lot for Saka. I mean, it's like, yeah. You know, 10 years of hard labour for Bukayo Saka as things stand. I mean, I mainly laugh because I don't really consider it a particularly realistic prospect.
No.
You know, they might as well have offered them the moon on a stick. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it ain't happening. Mm. But, an interesting sort of sidebar to the discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Look, I think ultimately it's definitely the right thing for the players to forgo some earnings in this period, as long as it's on the right terms. And I think that, you know, I think that's sort of what we said last week, really. But yeah, it is kind of amazing as well to watch this happening, not just at our club, but across football, and try and think what those implications are going to be.
Yeah, exactly. When you think about the sort of revenue streams that are now gone in terms of season tickets not being renewed, because how can you renew season tickets when there is no season to renew for, as far as we know, not yet anyway. And then there's whatever the commercial revenue, the TV revenue, the gate revenue, you know, match day revenue, you know, merchandise, all the ancillary revenue streams that are gone. It's going to be really interesting to see. Actually, I had a question. We might as well throw some questions in. And before just we get to this question, can we just like take a moment to give some kudos to Mikel Arteta, who apparently was instrumental in sort of bringing the squad together, because it was really a delicate situation. It felt to me like if it wasn't handled properly, this is something that could very well have caused friction between not all the players, but some of the players and the club at a time where we really didn't need that. And also, you know, some kudos for Hector Bellerin as well for being the guy who was front and center at this. Does it say anything to you that he was the man at the forefront of it rather than Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who is, you know, is the club captain and, you know, traditionally the guy with the title and the figurehead, you know, who would be at the center of negotiations like this on behalf of the squad. Like, you know, if this had happened in the Tony Adams era, you know, Tony Adams would be there, Patrick Vieira would be there. And I'm not saying this to be in any way critical of Aubameyang. I just think it's an interesting thing that that Bellerin was the guy.
Yeah, and I think people have different characters and different natures, and there are different kinds of leaders. And I think Bellerin, you know, obviously we know about how eloquent he can be and how engaged he is with, you know, the broader political spectrum, and how engaged he is with current affairs. And I think that will have all helped him in this. Also the fact that he's been in English football for, I mean, nearly a decade now, I would think. He came here at 15. He's been at Arsenal, you know, coming on for a decade. So I think he has that kind of longevity and that association, affiliation with English football to be that guy. But from what we understand, he has done a really terrific job, because this was when this was first put to the Arsenal squad, you know, it was very divided on this issue. We're talking sort of, you know, 52-48, kind of Brexit sort of proportions of uncertainty about what they were going to do here. And it's been a substantial negotiation and discussion to get them to the point where they've got a considerable majority. And yeah, Arteta's been a big part of that. But I think Bellerin's also handled it pretty skillfully. And I suppose, you know, something we've heard a lot of managers say is you don't have to have the armband to be a leader. But I think he is clearly demonstrating that in this period.
Mm. Well, you know, would it say anything to you about the potential future of Aubameyang? Or is that a separate thing?
That's a really good point, and not one I had thought of. I mean, look, I'm not particularly optimistic about Aubameyang's future. If anything, he's missing... He hasn't got that long left in his career, and he's missing a substantial period of football now. Mm. I kind of think if you had it in your mind that you might want to go and play somewhere else, that being forced to miss, you know, 6 months of football or whatever it might be would accelerate that desire. That would be the way I would perceive it. I suppose the other side of the coin is it might be more difficult for players to move in this World Cup.
Yeah. Anyway, look, it just occurred to me. It might be a case that, you know, maybe I don't want to go down that road. I was just thinking, you know, from a financial point of view and players' willingness to take cuts and those kind of things. But I don't want to sort of make any implications in there because it's just a half-formed thought in my head.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting as well, just because, you know, we know from things that have come out of the meetings that what happened to the wages of people who left the club was on the table as a discussion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of, like, if it was to be deferrals, would they get that money back?
Yeah. Well, look, here was the question that occurred to me or popped up. It comes from Tosh on Twitter, who's at Tabatson. And he says, do you think we will see other potential takeovers as the one proposed for Newcastle in the near future? What does it mean for us in the future? And a question that came in on the Discord as well from Liney, who said there was a good question asked on the Arsenal Vision podcast last week relating to how the guys would feel about Arsenal being purchased by a Middle Eastern billionaire. And of course, it's the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, isn't it, that's buying up Newcastle. Without wanting to recycle that talking point, I was just wondering how you would both react should it ever happen to us, like it may be happening to Newcastle. It just occurred to me, you know, that the idea of Stan Kroenke ever selling Arsenal, you know, seemed fanciful because, you know, he doesn't do that. We know that he doesn't part ways with his sports franchises in inverted commas, et cetera, et cetera. And we know that Josh has become much more involved and much more on the ground at Arsenal. It seems like, you know, he's the guy who is, you know, he's KSE's man at Arsenal. You know, Stan is top of the pile, but Josh is the Arsenal guy in that setup. But, you know, there is, he has a number of other sports teams to look after, and they're all suffering from this downturn and this lockdown and the lack of revenue. On top of that, his stadium that he was building in LA, it, as far as I know, was originally budgeted to cost $2 billion, which is a huge amount of money. But as far as I remember, is it now estimated to cost somewhere in the region of $6
billion? Right.
And can he sustain his interest in all of these outlets? I mean, $6 billion for a stadium, and that was before any of this was going down. Now there's going to be no live events and mass gatherings in LA until 2021, it seems. That was what the mayor of LA said last week. You know, how much more is it going to cost him, you know, to have this sort of gigantic white elephant of a stadium sitting there? So, yeah, there you are, a really roundabout way of saying, what do you think is going to happen with us, if anything?
Well, I suppose the issue is, even if Stan became more amenable to the idea of selling, how many people will be in a position or willing to buy at that point and make such a massive investment? You know, I mean, sure, the Saudi guys probably can because the wealth is so extraordinary that they're not invulnerable against an economic crisis like this, but certainly better protected than most. But I'm not sure how true that will be for other people. I guess he will be more vulnerable to a bid than he has been previously. It's difficult to imagine, isn't it? Because KFC have never sold a franchise.
Did you say KFC? I think you did.
And they do operate on a franchise model, yeah, actually.
They do. Yeah.
So could the Zinger Tower come tumbling down? I don't know. Listen, let's hope, yeah, that our colonel sells up soon. I'm not so sure that too many people will be willing to spend what it would take to buy Arsenal in this period.
Yeah, but I mean, could the value of Arsenal be much lower than it might have been in normal circumstances?
Perhaps.
You know, not just Arsenal, of course, every other football club. Like, if we're talking about, you know, the transfer market not operating in the same way, like a 60 million player becomes a 30 million player, you know, and even that seems a stretch to me at times. You know,
I think the Kroenkes have always said that their long-term investors. And I think if you make a long-term investment, you don't sell when the asset is at its weakest. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I get it. But I just wonder, I think there will be, maybe not at Arsenal, but I think there will be opportunities for those people who do have vast amounts of wealth, who probably aren't going to be affected by this as significantly as others. There are always going to be very rich people, and there are always going to be opportunists, and there are always going to be people ready to take advantage of an economic downturn for one person, you know, by virtue of their own wealth. So maybe it won't be Arsenal, but I do think there may well be a number of football clubs who either go to the wall or will require an owner like that. And I suppose, you know, we think about maybe football becoming better and cleaner and, you know, more honest and, you know, all the other good things we can think of when this is over, because we'll have learned lessons and we'll say, well, that's not the way to run any industry or any operation. Maybe we should focus on, you know, doing things the right way. But maybe the reality of it is that because of the kind of people who will be able to spend money and purchase football clubs and run football clubs, maybe it could be worse. Maybe there are worse people out there than there are right now.
I suspect that may be the case. And I mean, the Saudi question of sort of how would I feel about it happening at Arsenal is a really tricky one, and one that we've sort of, you know, we've all had to contemplate ethical questions about the ownership of the club in the last 15 years or so for various different reasons. I basically think that if you're going to watch and enjoy the Premier League as a product at this point, a degree of sort of cognitive dissonance is almost required.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are some ugly elements to kind of the business side, and you sort of are required to be able to accept that or put that aside almost in order to engage with the sport. Which is unfortunate, but that is kind of the way it is. And I suspect in the event of such a takeover, that would be the case. I mean, I have given the KSE as, you know, a tough old time as much as anybody. But when you do look at some of the options out there, I think from a kind of ethical perspective, there are things about them that are preferable. And I know that for many Arsenal fans won't stomach that opinion. But yeah. I do think at least their business is sport to an extent. Like,
yeah.
The worst thing about them is they don't really know a lot about football. That's kind of the worst thing about them.
Yeah.
But that's not that bad.
At least they're not chopping up journalists.
Well, there's that. Not yet, though. I mean, who knows? They're not happy with me, but we'll see. I but no, exactly that. And I don't know. Maybe we'll all learn to be a bit more kind to each other after this. Maybe once the lockdown's over, I'll run and embrace Stan and we'll have a little kiss and a cuddle. You never know.
With tongue or?
I don't know. The moustache puts me off.
Yeah. I can imagine. Okay. Well, seeing as we're talking about cognitive dissonance and things like that, here is a question from Adam Austin, who's at Adam_MA94. And he says, good morning, fellas. Good morning, Adam. He says, you're given the chance to rename the Emirates, hence the reference to cognitive dissonance, because, you know, if you're going to be critical of the Saudis taking over it and Newcastle, you have to accept the fact that our sponsor, our main sponsor and stadium name, etc., is, you know, has some associations that aren't that pleasant. He says, do you go for Ashburton Grove or New Highbury or any other names you can think of, really? What would you, you know, if I came to you tomorrow having used my sovereign wealth fund to chop up lots of journalists and then buy Arsenal, Stan and Josh are out, they're homeless, they're on the side of the road. Sorry about you guys, you had your chance, you fucked it up, I'm in, and I'm turning to you, my trusted podcast partner, and I'm saying to you, James, we need a new name for the stadium. What's it going to be? I'm already worried. I'm already worried.
I mean, listen, it's 2 years to the day since Arsene Wenger announced he was leaving. And I have to say, what about something, I mean, this is silly, but the Wenger Bowl.
Wenger
Bowl at the Wenger Bowl. The Wenger Dome 3000. The Nike Stadium. I mean, the Adidas Arena. It's a really good question. I saw this question too. I was convinced the stadium would be sort of referred to as Ashburton Grove. I thought, yeah, they'll call it the Emirates Stadium, but that won't stick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember quite clearly not writing the Emirates for years and years.
Yeah,
on the blog.
It just shows that if you keep hammering something hard enough, people will accept it. I mean, yeah, there was a long period where it was referred to as Ashburton Grove, and then it kind of that kind of died away. It would feel almost weird to go back to that in some respects. Mm. It's interesting because some clubs have these commercial agreements, but their stadiums are still called the same thing. Do you know what I mean? So, like, is Bournemouth Stadium, is it Dean Court? Yeah. But it's the Vitality, right? But I'm sure their fans still call it Dean Court because it was Dean Court for a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing when we move from Highbury, because it's sort of like Highbury, Old Trafford, Anfield, you know, the name of the stadium stuck and well before any naming rights or anything like that. I think it's very difficult to go back to it. I mean, it is referred to as the Arsenal Stadium when we're playing in Europe because for whatever reason, they don't take into account or they don't allow stadium naming or brand name. Yeah, so if you look at, like, if you download one of the UEFA match kits, press kits, you know, that you can get from the UEFA website ahead of a European game and it says blah, 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 at the Arsenal Stadium. It doesn't say the Emirates Stadium. So,
I mean, I always think that the name of the club shop is quite cool, right? The Armoury. I think that makes loads of sense. It fits with, like, the idea of Arsenal and it's got those kind of military connotations. So is there a name for the stadium that would, like, fit that identity? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm desperately trying to think of terms associated with artillery. but I can't, really. I mean, obviously, you don't want to call it, you know,
the ammunition dump.
Yeah. The battle zone. no man's land.
That's the Unai Emery years. It was known as that.
You know, the midfield kind of was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Something along that theme would be quite cool. I mean, New Highbury has a certain appeal because it's so close to Highbury.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's such proximity that I don't think it would be... It wouldn't be like... insanely cheeky to, but I wonder if it.
No, it wouldn't. Slightly, I don't. Would it take anything away from Highbury if you were to call it New Highbury?
No, I don't think so.
Mm.
I'm sort of I'm inclined towards that. If I can't think of something cleverer, what about you?
I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. It is difficult. I mean, why, in all our years, James, have Arsenal never been sponsored by Canon?
It's a great question, isn't it?
What's going on, marketers, marketeers, marketing department, Canon's marketing department? Think of the fucking things you could do.
Absolutely.
It's just
I
ridiculous.
Agree.
What an opportunity missed for cameras and us.
I mean, Canon needs to put their hands in their pockets. The Canon Dome. I mean, Arsenal Stadium
Ars Canon
is boring.
Grove.
I believe Highbury was officially called Arsenal Stadium.
It
I
was,
believe.
Yeah.
So it just shows, you know, you don't have to be called what you're officially called. It's weird, though, isn't it? Because it's always been the Emirates. How long has it been now? 15 years?
Yeah, 2000 is coming up on 2020, 2006, 14 coming up 15 years, yeah.
It will be very weird if and when it changes. That's for sure.
What if he just gave it, like, a person's name? Like, you know, if a...
The Wenger Dome.
No, but I had a guy that I used to work with and his dog was called John.
Right.
So just give it a person's name.
John.
John or Trevor.
Well, go and see John.
Yeah.
How is John? Quiet today.
Yeah. 60,000 people quiet. Inside John.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Could happen.
Could happen.
In the far reaches of the internet, could happen. I mean, yeah.
Stadium McStadium-y face.
That would be quite good. Mm. I think Yeah. New Highbury or Stadium at Stadium Face for me.
Yeah. All right.
What time did we start? Is this the end of part one or is it?
I think this could be the end of part one because we've done about 33 minutes.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it could be, yeah, a good time because we've exhausted this subject absolutely. So I think we should take a break and we'll come back and we'll do more questions in part two. Yeah.
Right after this. That's what you normally say.
That's what I say. That's what I say. You're stealing my lines, man.
Go on then.
Right after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog on the ArsBlog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. James, you can go first with the questions because you bigged it up in the off-air chat. You said you got a big one. So, you know, let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. Let's see what it
now
is.
I've got to get it out. Show everyone. So basically, sometimes we get asked questions that are so broad and so massive that I'm like, I've not got time for that on the Ask Us Extra. But given that we have nothing else to talk about,
right,
the rules are slightly different this time. So this is from Facebook and it's from Toye Ade. And Toye says, "Hi, gents. Today marks 2 years since the announcement of Wenger's soft dismissal." Right, that's his intro. And then his question is,
right,
what have you made of the club since then?
Whoa.
Go.
Well.
No, I know, it's massive, isn't it? But it is 2 years. It seems longer than that to me, you know, in a funny sort of way.
It kind of does, yeah. But I think that's because the Unai Emery years took 17 years to happen.
Off everyone's lifespan.
You know, yeah, exactly. What have I made of the club since then? I mean, it's weird because I've gone from being enthused by things to terrified by things to sort of being, okay, yeah, that's good. I like the way we're doing that, to like, oh, I'm not sure about this. I don't know about that. And then, like, I was in a very dark place a few months ago with everything, in a very, very, very dark place. And I haven't forgotten. I haven't forgotten how we got there and the people that were involved in that. I get accused of being a bit too negative towards a certain Danny DeVito. who could be our head of football or something. And now I'm enthused again. And, you know, so what have I made of the club since the Wenger, what did he call it? Soft dismissal.
Soft dismissal, yeah.
Look, there was always going to be a period of flux and change and all that kind of stuff. And we were going to have to do things in a different way and, you know, modernize the structures of the club, because you're not going to have, as we said many times before, you're not going to have that one guy at a football club anymore who manages everything, who is responsible for everything or feels responsible for everything in the way that he operates. So you're always going to have to, you know, get a head of recruitment. You're going to have to get a director of football or a sporting director or whatever that might be. You know, those structures are going to have to be put in place. You know, here's the thing about it is that, you know, the Emery thing didn't work out, right? It didn't work out, and that happens in football, at football clubs the world over. They bring in a manager, he's the wrong guy, it doesn't work out, he gets fired, they go again. But I do feel like sometimes the executive side of a football club is allowed to make mistake after mistake after mistake, or to sort of make decisions on things which reflect badly on them, but they don't get the same scrutiny, or they're not as easily dismissible as a manager. Do you know what I mean? So if it's going to take us, like, look, I hope Mikel Arteta works out really well, and I'm hugely positive about him, and I really like him, and I like the way he talks, and I like the way he gets the club, and I think, like most people, I'm very optimistic about what he will be able to do as a manager at this football club, because I think we can connect with him and resonate with him, right? But let's imagine that the guy who came after Unai Emery didn't quite work out, which could happen. And the guy that came after that didn't quite work out, which can happen, right? Why isn't the same thing true of executives? That if you put in place an executive structure that doesn't quite work, why don't you change executives in the same way? I know the jobs maybe aren't quite as expendable as a manager, but
yeah.
I do feel like if it's going to take us a while to get the thing right, the balance right, you know, in terms of manager and coaching staff, you know, why doesn't the same apply higher up?
Well, is it just that the timescales are different? Because theoretically, the executives exist to sort of provide at least a midterm, possibly a long-term vision for a club, you know, and you need... You know, this is kind of, you know, what's it called when you're sort of making the
devil's advocate?
Devil's advocate, that's it.
Devil's avocado.
Like, yeah, exactly, the devil's avocado. I'm having the devil's avocado now. I guess in an ideal situation, you do want somebody to provide some measure of continuity. And I guess, do they have to be allowed to get it wrong, at least once? Or is it like you had hired the wrong manager one time, done?
You know? Yeah, okay, no, I get that. That's fair. That's a good counter-argument to that. What have I made of the club, though? Can we go back to that?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
I think I was prepared for some fluctuations in our performance when somebody like Wenger... left. You know, we'd already been enduring fluctuations in performance on the pitch. So I was prepared for things not to go smoothly right from the very start. And they, you know, I think what's lost in the mists of time is that even though Emery really wasn't too many people's first choice as manager, right?
No.
There was, I think, a groundswell of support for him because we wanted him to do a good job. Mm. You know, I think there was, you know, support for him even when things weren't going that well. You know, the 22 game unbeaten run.
We looked for the positives.
We tried until, for me anyway, it became blindingly obvious that this was a, you know, he was a problem. Mm. And that was evident by the end of his first season. So where I went to a dark place was the way that things were handled when this season went bad, and I feel like the people who are running the club completely misjudged the mood. They misjudged the sentiment of the fans. They misjudged or were unwilling. They were either unwilling to accept the fact that Emery was doing a terrible job or didn't think he was doing a terrible job. I'm not sure which is worse. Mm. You know, the sort of pushback against some of the fan sentiment with some of the stuff that was leaked, what was the phrase?
Noise.
The noise, that kind of stuff. It was just like, come on. You know, how are you getting this so badly wrong? And then, you know, putting Freddie in charge with, you know, Per Mertesacker and the goalkeeping coach. And that was all the staff that they gave him. And, you know, that whole thing was really badly handled. So for me, while I'm hugely optimistic about Arteta and what he can do, that has put a massive dent in the faith that I had or have in those on high, because I feel like those mistakes and the way that those things were handled was so egregiously bad that you can't help but be slightly scarred by them. Do you ever see a fucking dog that's been beaten its whole life and somebody puts their hand down to pat the dog and he kind of cowers away?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, a bit like that. Like, I'm not going to forget where we were and how bad it was, because while we might forget the support that Emery got, I do wonder if sort of Arteta coming in and wiping things clean a little bit has made people forget just how bad it was when Emery eventually got fired.
Well, also, I mean, the crisis that we're going through at the moment, it probably does the club a little bit of a favour in that it puts some distance, doesn't it, between that low point and whenever football restarts. And I suspect that there'll be such anticipation, excitement about football coming back that those things will be slightly forgotten.
Mm. I'm not forgetting.
No, not by everybody, no. Clearly. No. But I think, I mean, it's been really fascinating. I think as much as we all said when Arsene went, oh, it might get worse before it gets better, I think it did get actually quite a lot worse than I thought it would. Like in the early part of this season, you know, when we were kind of lower half of the table, there were sort of semi-serious conversations about the relegation zone. That I didn't expect it to get that bad after Arsene went. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I thought it would be easier to produce a bit of a turnaround and a bit swifter. I mean, as it panned out, I think Emery was kind of a classic successor to a long-term legendary manager in some ways.
Mm.
Like, you know, a guy who sort of was kind of the anti-Wenger in some respects and didn't really fit, but kind of, I don't know, sort of didn't cost us that much either.
Mm.
I mean, you could say it cost us Champions League qualification partly, but I sort of think it wasn't a great period of time and, you know, it sort of was a period of enormous turnover. It feels like Arteta's the actual start of something. But it's been a very, very odd couple of years. I mean, particularly I think when I reflect on our transfer windows, you know, we're talking about forthcoming transfer windows and how I saw a good quote. Damian Comoli this morning was saying that he'd been told by an agent there are three Premier League clubs who will be able to spend money in the next transfer window.
So,
and I can tell you now, Arsenal ain't going to be one of them.
So that's Man City, Chelsea, Newcastle?
Yeah. Newcastle, possibly, maybe. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of fascinating. But in the last two, we actually had, you know, a decent amount of money. I mean, in last summer's transfer window, we spent, well over £100 million, wasn't it? £140 million, something like that. I know we sold Alex Iwobi, etc. too, but we spent a good chunk of money and we probably won't ever be able to do something like that again for a while.
Yeah.
And also assessing that business is fascinating because on the day it was all done, we were all really chuffed with it. But as the season played out, maybe less so.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's the thing about transfers. When they happen, you immediately want to, think the best of the players that you're bringing in. You know, it's like, ooh, I never heard of this Elneny guy. I'm sure he's great. He's going to be like top player, you know. We've uncovered another bargain here. And then you just realize, well, he's just a kind of an average player. So, you know, being enthused about transfer business when it happens versus being, what's the word, quizzical? Or questioning that business down the line when we've actually seen the players and what they've produced on the pitch, I think is, you know, are reasonable positions to take in both instances. You can be happy that you've signed someone, and then a little bit down the way when you see them play and you make a judgment on the player, you know, based on what he's producing on the pitch versus what he's cost, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay to use evidence for your mind to change. So...
Yeah, I suppose what's tricky is sort of to what extent do you give an executive leeway for the vagaries of how these things actually play out? So, for example, a manager might look like a logical appointment, but for some reason they don't fit. I'm not saying Emery fits into that camp, because I think there was enough evidence, if you knew a lot about him, to be concerned about that appointment. But say a signing, you know, say Nicolas Pepe, for example, I think... many Arsenal fans or objective observers would look at that and go, oh, that is a very good signing. And yet it didn't quite become that in his first season.
Yeah. Look, I get it. So, you know, it is an interesting one. I would say, just finally on this, because we'll move on and we'll take another question. Let me ask you a question then, rather than say something myself. I mean, do you think that in the 18 months or so that he has been head of football at Arsenal, Raul Sanyehi would be proudly displaying his CV and his accomplishments to many people?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But my only thing I would say is he might say, I need more time than that. Of course. In fact, not he might.
I definitely need more time.
But, you know, I don't think we've gone forwards particularly.
Or, you know, to put it another way, we kind of went backwards a lot.
Yeah.
That, you know, or, you know, the decline didn't really...
The decline didn't halt.
No.
With Arsene leaving, that's for sure.
It got temporarily better, but then it became more decline-y than ever.
Steeper.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. It's my question. And this one comes from... Ah, fuck, I had it here and now it's gone. It comes from, for fuck's sake, I got it here now, from Peter Hoost, who's at Peter Hoost on Twitter. And he says, which of Wenger's almost signings were you hoping for the most?
Oh, that's a great question.
For instance, I was really hoping for Eden Hazard and believed for some time that he would come. Him ending up being really good for a rival kind of sucked. And I know you did a piece this week for The Athletic on more transfers that almost happened, but didn't, which I did read, but now I can't remember any of them. So I'm just going to go back and look at them while you're talking.
It was ones like, that piece was ones like Vardy.
Oh, yeah.
Hazard was mentioned. Juan Mata. I think Mata might be one of the ones that figures really highly for you. Mm. I know how much you wanted us to get him that summer. I remember well. Kante was another one mentioned, and I'd done another piece previously, which was obviously Luis Suarez, Higuain, a few others, Thomas Lamar, Nuri Sahin. There are plenty with Arsenal. You've got a good old wide selection. I mean, different names jump out at me. I have to say, I think although we eventually got him and it didn't work out great, the summer we were trying to get Baptista from Sevilla, I was desperate for us to get him. Absolutely desperate. This was 2006, I believe.
Oh, Patrick the beast.
Sorry, 2005. Yeah. La Bestia. Vieira had gone, I think, to Juventus. And the talk was that Arsenal were going to reshape their midfield around this brilliant goal-scoring Brazilian from La Liga. And I was in Spain most of that summer, you know, every day reading
Spanish sports dailies. Was that why? Was that the only reason you were in Spain for most of the summer? You just went over to read the papers?
I tried to put him in a suitcase and bring him back. I think I was on holiday, but I was just absolutely... I you know, when you watch, particularly in these days, you know, there was La Liga was on Sky Sports quite often. I watched quite a lot of it. And I just loved Baptista. He was sensational in that team. And I know fans who only saw him at Arsenal might be like, really? Because he didn't really ever click with us, yeah, apart from one spectacular game. But yeah, I was very, very on board with that and slightly gutted when he went to Real Madrid. But there are others. What about you?
I'm thinking, you know, there's some which were more public than others. So the Hazard one was really public because, you know, we all knew about it. We knew of our interest in him. And of course, we ended up getting a different player from the same club, Gervinho, which really didn't work out. I think about players who might have made a big impact at Arsenal, you know, over the Wenger years. And considering our issues in defence, I do wonder what might have happened if we'd signed Vincent Kompany a bit earlier than Man City did, because he was certainly a player that we were after. Mm. And here's another one that I'm pretty sure wasn't too public, but we were absolutely 100% on the case of Luka Modric.
Oh, yeah. That's a really interesting one.
When he joined...
This is good. This is all good for my part three. You're helping me do the homework on it.
Yeah, so he obviously went from Dinamo Zagreb to Tottenham. But that summer, I think it was 2007 or 2008, we were really, really, really close to doing a deal for him. And... if for whatever reason it didn't happen. Another one I think is Marco Reus.
Yeah. God, that used to come up every...
Yeah,
but... sort of predates Julian Draxler, doesn't it?
Yeah. But Wenger was a huge fan of Marco Reus, and we did make some attempts to bring him in a good few summers ago, and maybe it happened more than once, but I know that certainly there was a lot of contact a few summers ago. And that didn't happen. And then you go back to, you know, stuff like Cristiano Ronaldo and Zlatan, you know, players who were certainly on our radar. You know, the Ronaldo Messi, story, of course. Yeah. Oh, Messi. Yeah, we were trying to bring Messi in, you know, at the same time as Fabregas. But because of the work permit thing, we couldn't do it. Same with Gerard Piqué. Piqué was supposed to come with Fabregas, and he ended up at Man United. You know, the Ronaldo story where we had agreed terms with Sporting, wasn't it? And then United came in and blew us out of the water in terms of a fee. You know, he'd been to Highbury and all that kind of stuff. Zlatan, I don't do trials. Zlatan's the kind of player who would have turned up, scored a load of goals, and then fucked off and become, you know, one of those enemy players, you know.
I mean, there are those young guys are, you know, they are great examples, but sometimes you get more short-term things. I mean, I remember when Leicester won the league and Arsenal were, you know, in for Vardy and in for Kante. I mean, particularly in the case of Kante, he was a player who seemed like such an obvious antidote to so many of the problems Arsenal had in terms of protecting their back four, you know, in the centre of midfield. And you know, in the piece we go over the reasons it didn't happen, and it was all to do with agents' fees and things like that. But yeah, I think he would have made a massive impact. I mean, he went to Chelsea and they won the league that season.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that was an issue with his agents and stuff, wasn't it? It was about how much we were going to pay the agents and what have you. Okay.
Let's have another question. On the subject of signings and transfers, Kyle on Twitter @Kyle_Laurie says, it's been a weird welcome to management for Mikel Arteta, but has the transfer deal for Cedric now become our most bizarre signing ever?
It's certainly going to be up there, isn't it?
It's going into, the sort of Kim Kjellstrom Hall of Fame, surely.
It could be. I mean, it depends what happens because, you know, I think the lack of football in some strange way increases his chances of getting a permanent deal to Arsenal because it's easy and convenient.
Sure.
Right? So I wonder if, you know, the season had played out as normal and, you know, his loan spell would have ended. He would have become a free agent. I think there was an easy way for Arsenal to do the deal anyway. But, you know, perhaps our league position might have informed things. Perhaps, you know, if he played a few games and been really, really terrible, that would have informed things. Similarly, he could have played a few games and been really, really good. And we might have said, yeah, well, this seems like an easy way to boost the right back position. I think he will sign a permanent deal with us, mostly because I think, you know, his agent is very closely connected to the Arsenal, I don't want to say boardroom, because it's not really the board of directors or anything like that. It's, you know, he's very close to Edu. He's obviously very close to Raul Sanyehi.
Yeah,
he's close to the football executives at the club. You know, he watches games with them in the director's box. So I feel like there's, you know, I don't want to, again, cast any aspersions or anything like that. But that is another one of those things that makes me slightly wary of the people who are running the club and what have you. It's just, you know, that agents, mates, players, you know, it's all a bit too small of a circle, if you like, for me. And again, I'm not saying anything untoward is going on. It could all be very much above board, but it may not necessarily be the right way to do your transfer business. But, I think given what's happening and given the weird contractual situations that are going on and the uncertainty over whether football will start again and whether the transfer market as we know it is going to operate, I think if there's a quick and easy way to sign a right back that we need, are we going to go out scouting and looking around, or are we going to get the guy who's been, you know, he's just there. He's there. It's easy to do. So
sure.
I kind of feel like that will be easy to do.
Yeah,
so
affordable, probably.
I can't remember what the exact question was, but is it one of the most bizarre? Yeah, it probably is. But I think he will probably become an Arsenal player officially.
It'll be as long a wait for a debut as I can recall. Probably since we signed Theo Walcott, you know, in terms of like a player who you expected to play.
That's
a little.
Right, yeah, because he signed in the January, didn't he? He didn't make his
and
debut until
the next season.
Yeah.
With a World Cup in between, of course.
Isn't that the most ridiculously bizarre thing you ever heard of? That you know, Theo Walcott at 16 years of age joins Arsenal from Southampton, doesn't play a minute for Arsenal, but somehow gets selected for the England World Cup squad way before he was ready to be part of anything like that. It's mad, isn't it?
It is kind of incredible, yeah. Who was it?
That was Sven Göran Eriksson, yeah.
And it was at the expense of Jermaine Defoe, I believe, who was sort of, you know, scoring goals in the Premier League and a grown-up.
An established professional player and a grown-up, yeah.
He was a grown-up, yeah. And he took the little boy.
They took a child.
Yeah, they took a child instead. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, the issue with it was, you know, there have been examples of that. I mean, I believe Brazil took the great Ronaldo when he was like 17 to a tournament and he didn't play a minute, but it was sort of, you know, you're learning, you're going to be part of this squad in the future. But they had lots of other good options at that time. England sort of needed that player in the squad and sort of didn't have them. It was pretty incredible.
And just looking up the England World Cup squad of 2006.
Yeah. So it was probably still...
Forwards were...
Heskey and Owen, wasn't it?
Michael Owen, Wayne Rooney, Peter Crouch...
Peter Crouch.
And
yeah.
Theo Walcott.
And I don't think Walcott got on in the tournament. He played in a couple of the warm-up friendlies for a few minutes, which is the first time that many Arsenal fans saw him play.
It's mad.
It was properly mad, yeah. I think Rooney had kind of exploded onto the scene so dramatically not that long before, a couple of years before, that I think there was just kind of an assumption of, like, oh, we've got another one of those now. We've got another one of those ones. So it was going to be the same. But, I mean, Walcott actually made a fairly immediate impact in an Arsenal shirt. He set up an equaliser on the opening day of the following season for Gilberto against Aston Villa.
The first game at the new stadium. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I can remember exactly where I was when that goal went in. I was sitting in a bar in Barcelona. The bar was called Scobie's, on Ronda Universidad, I think. It's the name of the road. Anyway, just not far from Plaza Catalunya. And I was sitting there and chatting away with two random Arsenal fans who were there. And I was thinking, fucking hell, are we really going to lose the first game at our brand new stadium to a goal scored by Olaf Melberg? Is that what's really going to happen here? Come on, we can't have that. And then Gilberto scored. And I remember the stadium being so brand new and everything else. It didn't have any of the sort of Arsenal, what did they call it?
Arsenalization.
Arsenalization. Yeah. It didn't have any of that. So there were these kind of concrete, you know, the rows of the stands were sort of just bare concrete, and it looked a bit industrial and what have you. But yeah, big goal from Gilberto.
Big goal from Gilberto. He had a knack in that period, actually. That was sort of around when he was taking penalties for us, I believe. Yeah, what was the question? I've forgotten now. Oh,
can't
yeah,
remember.
Weirdest signing ever.
Yeah,
I don't know what we were talking about. What about this from Jonathan Illott?
Okay.
Is the Saka situation as simple as sign or sell?
See, I was thinking, I saw that question, I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as simple as sign or sell, but I was thinking to myself, if we can't get Bukayo Saka to sign a new contract, it's an abject failure.
In a pandemic.
It's an abject failure from the people who are running the football club, right? And then I was thinking, it is maybe just slightly complicated by this idea that there's been this big, huge discussion about players taking pay cuts.
Yeah.
And then we're going to say to Bukayo Saka, well, you're a really good player. We want your future here at Arsenal. You're earning an absolute pittance in comparison to what you should be, and certainly in relation to what you've produced on the pitch for us. You know, in terms of your usefulness, and what you're earning is ridiculous. You know, you've made the step forward. You need to be rewarded for that. You know, you're taking a 12.5% pay cut of your $3,000 a week. Now, here's a new contract on $40,000 a week. You know, how does that work? How does that tally with perhaps what it might mean for some of the other players in the squad? Hang on a minute, my wages are being cut and Bukayo Saka, even if I understand it, is getting a 6,000% increase on his salary.
Well, in no other business in the world is anyone going to get a pay rise in this period.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But we have no choice if we want to keep Bukayo Saka than to give him massive pay rise. Because he deserves it, and because by any standards, you know, he merits that money. You know, even if football isn't on at the moment, you know, how do you secure a talent like that, a guy who could be part of our team for years and years to come? You know, he's emerged from our academy. You have to pay him. You cannot just sort of say, well, it's all a bit pandemic-y at the moment. Hang on there. You've got to give him the money. So
maybe that's what the 12.5% is for.
To pay Bukayo
Saka fund. yeah, I mean, that must be incredible. I mean, he's edging closer and closer to the end of that contract.
Mm.
But equally, it's sort of very difficult to imagine that the club's immediate priority has been to extend that contract just because they've been firefighting to this point.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, that is a fire. That is a fire that is burning and raging and needs to be snuffed out. I mean, Arsenal really need to keep Bukayo Saka, especially in some respects, given the fact that if we are thinking, well, transfer fees might be not a thing of the past, but certainly significantly reduced. You know, if the choice is sign or sell, well, sell for what? Sell to who? I mean, what's much more likely is Bukayo Saka runs down his contract and leaves for something approaching a tribunal compensation.
Oh.
And that would be disastrous.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've got no choice. They've got no choice. And I would, you know, I know it's a difficult and complicated situation, but I would, you know, I, as much as I haven't forgotten some of the other stuff, this would be absolutely unforgivable not to tie down Saka.
the tricky thing is, if you're Saka's agent, you know, Arsenal can come to you. I think David Ornstein said the other day it might be £5,000 that Saka's on. It's not a lot of money either way. But, well, it is a lot of money to a lot of people, but not for a Premier League footballer.
Yeah.
But Arsenal can say, we're going to give you a X 100% pay rise to, I don't know, £40,000 a week, let's say, right?
Mm.
And his agent can look at that and go, okay. But if Saka were to leave Arsenal and go to Manchester United or Manchester City, I think they would probably pay him double what Arsenal might offer in that situation.
Yeah, they could. I mean, I suppose the thing to say is that you have to take into account what the player wants in terms of, you know, I think this would be a much more difficult discussion or, you know, for the club to have if there was somebody like Unai Emery in charge. Whereas I think the players are really into Mikel Arteta and what he does and how he might develop them. So I think if you're Saka, you're looking at the next few years of your career and you're thinking, well, you know, am I going to go to Man United and be coached by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Even if it is more money, fuck that. Who needs that in their life? Whereas if you're saying, I can sign a contract with Arsenal, which gives me a big pay rise, which pays me something approaching what's commensurate with my talent and ability and what I'm producing, and no doubt with incentives built into it and pay rises built into it and, you know, year-on-year pay rises and, you know, all of the various bonus aspects which could significantly increase his earnings. And at the same time, I'm going to get to work with Mikel Arteta at the club I've grown up at, and I can develop as a player and become better as a player under his tutelage. I think that's an attractive package to present to Saka and his agent. You know, sure, he can get more money in lots of places if he runs down his contract, but is it going to be the best thing for him as a player? Maybe that's a kind of rose-tinted view of the situation because I really want him to stay, but I think it is a really big selling point if that's the discussion you're going to have.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, look, I'm desperate for Arsenal to keep him. I think he's a massive part of, you know, the recent good vibes that have come out of the team and out of the squad, and he's one of the reasons I've got some hope for when the football restarts. So fingers crossed we can, you know, pay him what's needed. But it is a tricky time to be negotiating a new contract with anybody.
Yeah.
Especially having gone through this pay cut thing.
Okay, let's do a few quickfire ones to finish off with. AFC Met, who's at AFC Met, says, if you could go back in time and only keep one of the following players from the relevant years, who would it be? Vieira, 2006. Henri, 2007. Fabregas, 2011. And Robin Van Persie, 2012.
That's really tough, actually.
Uh-huh. It is.
Because, just to explain my thinking, kind of when Vieira left, you know, there was, how can I put it? Like, I would have loved to have kept Fabregas or Van Persie because they were kind of keeping those teams afloat. But I'm not sure how sustainable those squads were anyway in that period. And you know, Vieira was this absolutely iconic player, but there was a kind of logic in moving him on at that time, especially given he'd been pushing for it. And the same goes for Henri. I think I'm going to say Fabregas.
Okay.
Just because I feel like he was the heart of that team, and when he left, you know, it left a significant void. So I'm going to say Fabregas. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm tempted for Fabregas because I feel like, you know, if we'd put the right players around him and Xabi Alonso and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But I do wonder what would have happened if we kept Van Persie and added someone like Santi Cazorla. As well.
True.
You know, I know we use the Van Persie money to basically sign Giroud, Podolski and Cazorla, didn't we, that summer? I mean, they played a big part of it. But I do wonder, Yeah.
He was my number two, weirdly. I know Vieira and Henri are some of the greatest players in Arsenal's history, but when you look at their age when they went, you know, there was, and I know Van Persie was no spring chicken either, but there was a kind of logic to it. Van Persie as well, the way in which he left and the team he went to and the impact he had in that season at Old Trafford was also agonising. So that's a decent shout too, I think.
Okay, let's see.
What about this one? Go on. George Stevens. If Mikel Arteta had the voice of Sean Dyche, would you still believe in him?
That'd be funny. Like, same accent or just...
Yeah. I think he's got...
Spanish accent.
I think he's got the accent and the voice, yeah.
See, I don't think Mikel Arteta just physically isn't able to produce... That the sound that Sean Dyche produces, because it comes from him being this big, gigantic man, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah,
I think Arteta's vocal cords just couldn't do it. Would I still believe in him? It's about what they say and not how they say it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jacob, who's at Orkis Snack 3, says, could you rate your favourite Swedish players down the years? My favourite is Stefan Schwartz.
Stefan Schwartz, really good player.
I did like the fact that he left Arsenal because his wife hated living in London, apparently. And then he went to Sunderland.
Did he go to Sunderland? Right.
He went to Sunderland.
Did he play for Fiorentina at some point?
Stefan Schwartz.
I think he did. I might be wrong about that, but... Yes, he did, after
he left us.
He went to Fiorentina, then Valencia, then Sunderland. He's sort of just as my Arsenal consciousness was sort of forming, so I don't know. Schwartz and Limpar are players who, you know, I've seen bits of, but not really enough to have a strong opinion on. But people who watched Anders Limpar really loved him, I think.
Yes, I loved Anders Limpar, so there's no going beyond Anders Limpar for me.
Really, as in not even Freddy?
Oh, God, I love Freddy too, though. But there was just something about Limpar that was, I don't know, maybe it was because of the time that I just really liked watching him. I loved, you know, when he'd take off at a defence and just dribble at them and murder them. I remember him scoring a goal, maybe a few goals, against Leeds that way. Which are, I remember being heartbroken when he left. Like, absolutely heartbroken, because I found out by picking up a newspaper and on the back page was Anders Limpar holding up an Everton shirt. And I was like, what the fuck has happened here? Where'd that come from? This was, you know, pre-internet, you know.
Horrible way to find out.
Sure,
I loved Freddie, particularly like in his first few years. I thought he was just sensational. You know, red hair, all that. Really loved him. So I'd say him. I mean, I did have a soft spot for everyone's favourite Egyptian goalkeeper, Rami Shaban. I really liked Rami. I thought that he, on his few Arsenal appearances, looked pretty decent. But then he broke his leg and it all kind of went wrong.
He did, of course. And he's still on Twitter. You know, always positive about the team and everything else.
Big Arsenal fan,
Seb Larsson as well, of course.
Seb Larsson, I think he's still playing, which he's 34. Yeah, he plays in Sweden, but he's still with the Swedish national team. He's now got 118 caps.
Wow.
Some career, that.
Sure is. Takes a good free kick.
Takes a
good free kick. Yeah. Okay. Here is a question from Rohit M, who's at Rohitster, who says, who's going to come out of the lockdown with the most ridiculous haircut?
What, out of me and you?
Not me and you. We don't have haircuts. You need to have hair to have a haircut. And let's not go down the hair replacement therapy line again.
Okay. I haven't had anyone get in touch, by the way, and offered.
No, me neither. So. I've had no offers of free wigs or anything.
Unbelievable.
Maybe we just don't connect. We don't connect with the wig. What?
Oh, when Bearded Genius got a free hair transplant on Twitter because he got enough retweets.
I do remember you telling me about this before.
That's great. Who's going to come up with the most ridiculous hair? Well, Arteta's looks in pretty good nick still, doesn't it?
Does, yeah. I mean, easily manageable.
I think Ainsley Maitland-Niles needs to grow his back. I don't... Listen, there are some people for whom the shaved head really works. I'm not sure he's one of those people.
I mean, it's not much of a difference to the sort of tight...
I know, but just sometimes with some people it doesn't look quite right. I mean, who else is a contender? Maybe if Guendouzi's just let it grow and Luiz, you know. If Guendouzi... I haven't seen Guendouzi. I've not seen a picture of him. Luiz is all over Instagram.
But yeah.
Guendouzi might come out looking like Hector's, a wild man.
Hector shaved his head.
Yeah, yeah. He looks slick as you'd expect.
Do you know what I'd really like to get, like, a Clippers on the number one or zero and just shear a channel right down the center of Guendouzi's head or Luiz. Or anyone right, with that kind of long hair. So they've got
sprouting
like...
Sprouting from the sides.
Yeah, so they've got like two... Not even a big baldy head, just a big bald stripe down the middle. And then
like
an
anti-mohawk.
Yeah, exactly, an anti-mohawk. That'd be amazing. Yeah. I just love the sensation of doing it, though. Just zzz, like shearing a sheep.
Yeah, I think that would... And it would look quite cool.
I think
they
so.
They could basically have each half in like bunches. And then a little sort of... runway down the middle.
Yeah, exactly. One half is, you know, blonde. The other half is green, whatever you can do
starting
with your head.
Starting to feel a bit sort of Rigobert Song at this point.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Why not? Go the whole way.
Go the whole way. I think I have one more.
Oh, okay.
Have we got
go
time
on.
For one more? I think we've got time for one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but this is definitely the last one. It comes from Sochivilia, at Sochivilia on Twitter. And they say... If you were blindfolded in your home and were told there were three medium-sized turtles let loose, how long do you think it would take you to find them? I would like to know.
Ask me again, Andrew. Sorry, turtles.
So you're blindfolded and you're told that there are three medium-sized turtles let loose in your home. How long do you think it would take for you to find them?
Quite a long time, because I think turtles, they don't move fast when they're on the land. So I think there's every... And I to the touch, you know, you might touch one and just think that's an object. It's not like they're furry, do you know what I mean? They could be made of... any wooden object's got quite a similar feel, I would imagine.
What is this round wooden object with legs and a head? I wonder what it could be.
The problem is I've got... My house is littered with those. Absolutely covered in them.
Like fake
carved
turtles?
Animals. Yeah.
Right, okay.
I've swum with turtles, actually, which is cool.
I'm suspicious of turtles.
What do you not like about them?
It's not that I don't like them. I'd just be a bit suspicious of them. You know, they're a bit snappy and stuff.
Mm. I didn't sort of do it on purpose. I was kind of swimming and there were turtles there.
I kind of feel like we should leave them the fuck alone, you know?
Yeah. You absolutely should.
Yeah.
You absolutely should.
Like, they live for ages. And ages.
Yeah, they've
like,
seen some shit.
They've seen some serious shit. And that gets passed down through generations. So...
I think it would take me about... It depends how big your house is, doesn't it? I think it would take me about... Three turtles. I think it'd take me hours.
Yeah.
I think it would take me hours.
I'd say... Because you're blindfolded.
So you've got to navigate your way around anyway.
Mm.
You could lose your bearings. And if they're, like, on the floor, like, I don't know if you've ever watched anything where someone is blindfolded or is in the complete darkness. Like, they, on I'm a Celebrity, when Ian Wright was on it last year, someone says they had to go in a room that was completely dark and get a gold star out to get a meal for camp, right?
Right.
And obviously there's the rooms full of, not turtles, but, like, more awful things, like snakes and spiders and stuff.
Fuck that shit.
And they could be right by the star, but obviously they miss it time and time
but
again.
But let me ask you, how are they supposed to find it? Or is it just by touch? You're supposed to...
By touch.
All right,
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So the sort of, you know, the problem is, oh no, I've touched a snake. Which is kind of the same with the turtles, except you want to touch the animals.
I would say I could find them in less than an hour. I'm just thinking about
really?
It. Yeah, because I'm going to be blindfolded at the front door.
Your dogs aren't allowed to help.
Dogs aren't allowed to help. So I'm blindfolded at the front door and I'm going to do it...
On your hands and knees.
On my hands and knees, exactly. Under the beds. Yeah, I'd do it in an hour.
I think that would be quite scary.
I go upstairs for... Yeah, I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like it, but I could. I reckon I could do it. Because there's only a limited number of places they could be, you know?
I can't imagine turtles can navigate stairs. That seems like a recipe for disaster.
Mm.
So there'd have to be little gates along the stairs. But I think it would take me hours, I'll be honest.
Okay. Okay, well, look.
Let's try next week on the on YouTube.
Do it live on YouTube. Anyone who's got three turtles, just send them by post to 7 Dublin and, you know, we'll do the rest.
Great.
Okay, well, look, we'll leave it there. Thank you as ever for listening. Thank you for being with us. Do join us tomorrow night on the YouTube. We'll post the links on Twitter and what have you. We will play FIFA against each other, assuming, of course, that the EA servers aren't bollocks like they were last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as if there's sort of a mass of people playing video games all of a sudden that they can't cope with the traffic. I don't know what the story is. But anyway, that'll be there tomorrow. We will have more podcasts and stuff during the week or towards the end of the week anyway. We'll do our best to keep you entertained. Thank you as ever, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.